Today is Monday, March 14th, 2001. I'm Casey Edgarian.
I'm Holly Disrank, and this is News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Good evening. It's current time 5:08 and time for a full hour of independent news. In campus news, we will be bringing you coverage of 5 days for the homeless on now across campus. We will also be joined in studio by Olivia and Kirsten, two conservation students who are working on a conservation project in Borneo, Indonesia.
As well, we'll be featuring a segment on a protest at Olympic Village this past weekend. Sharon Hundle will bring us our weekly health feature, and we will also be talking about the World University College Symposium that happened last week.
All this, plus your weekday weather forecast, right here on News 101, your source for independent, local, national, and international news.
But first, the headlines from Free Speech Radio News.
I'm Nell Abram with headlines for Free Speech Radio News.
Dies ist ein Moratorium, und dieses Moratorium gilt für 3 Monate.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced a 3-month moratorium on a nuclear power plan today that would have lengthened the life of aging nuclear plants by about 12 years. The agreement was part of her government's energy policy. In the South, state elections are just 2 weeks away, and anti-nuclear opposition parties like the Social Democrats and the Greens are in a very tight contest with Merkel's bloc. Tens of thousands of demonstrators formed a 27-mile-long human chain there over the weekend, saying no thanks to nuclear power. The protest was in the works long before the earthquake in Japan, but organizers note that the explosions at nuclear facilities underscore inherent safety issues. Switzerland also put nuclear plant construction plans on hold today. President Obama continued his push to reform the federal No Child Left Behind program. Speaking at a Northern Virginia middle school today, Obama challenged Congress to send him a fix to the Bush-era education program before school starts again next fall.
According to new estimates, under the system No Child Left Behind put in place, more than 80% of our schools may be labeled as failing. That's an astonishing number. And our impulse is to either be outraged that the numbers are so high or skeptical that they're even true. And let's face it, skepticism is somewhat justified. We know that 4 out of 5 schools in this country aren't failing. So what we're doing to measure success and failure is out of line.
The president announced today that local school districts can now qualify for money under his program, Race to the Top, which has also drawn criticism from education reform advocates. But education funding is still up in the air. It's part of the outstanding budget agreement. The current continuing resolution keeping the government open right now expires this Friday. The Israeli government has approved expanding settlement construction in the West Bank following an attack Friday that left 5 settlers from the same family dead. Meantime, raids in retaliation continue in Palestinian communities. Ghassan Banoura reports.
The Israeli Prime Minister's office says up to 500 homes will be built in major settlements across the West Bank. The announcement was made shortly after an unknown man killed a settler family in the northern West Bank settlement of Itamar. The dead include a father, mother, and 3 children aged 11, 3, and a 3-month-old baby. No one has yet claimed responsibility for the Itamar attack, but the Israeli military and settlers have escalated their attacks on West Bank communities. As many as 50 Palestinians have been arrested since Saturday, many from the village of Awarta, immediately south of Itamar. Hassan Awad says his home has been repeatedly invaded.
Since yesterday, my home has been raided 3 times. They forced the children and the rest of my family into 1 room. They released police dogs and searched the whole home, ransacking it and turning it upside down. All my things are on top of each other. They also attacked all the other houses in the village under the pretext of terrorist acts.
Palestinian and U.S. officials condemned both the Itamar attack and the expanded Israeli construction in West Bank settlements. According to international law, all Israeli West Bank settlements, home to 500,000 settlers, are illegal. Ghassan Banoura, Afasaran, Bethlehem.
Lawyers representing hundreds of Guatemalans unwittingly infected with syphilis by U.S. researchers filed suit against the government today. In the 1940s, scientists studying penicillin at the National Institutes of Health deliberately infected some 700 Guatemalans orphans, psychiatric patients, prisoners, and soldiers. The U.S. acknowledged the experiments last year. The suit seeks compensation for victims or their heirs. The Pentagon defended the conditions of Private First Class Bradley Manning's detention today, saying he's being held under the same conditions as any other maximum security prisoner on prevention of injury watch. But Manning's psychologist says he's not suicidal. The soldier is accused of leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks and has been in the Marine Corps brig at Quantico since last July. Over the weekend, State Department spokesperson P.J. Crowley resigned after publicly expressing his views on the Manning detention. He said that while he thought Manning does deserve to be in prison, his treatment while there has been, quote, ridiculous and counterproductive and stupid. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton accepted Crowley's resignation with regret. Deputy Assistant Secretary Michael Hammer will temporarily serve in Crowley's stead. Authorities in Bahrain have confirmed that military troops from the Gulf Cooperation Council arrived today. Armored personnel carriers from Saudi Arabia caravaned into the capital, and U.S. officials warned U.S. citizens to stay inside. Pro-government lawmakers called for martial law. According to human rights groups, some 1,000 people were hurt yesterday during violence between security forces and protesters. In Yemen today, government troops fired live rounds and tear gas at a large group of protesters in eastern Marib province, injuring dozens. And according to Amnesty International, two demonstrators died and another 1,000 were injured in Sana'a Saturday when security forces opened fire on protesters while they prayed. For Free Speech Radio News, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
Thanks to FSRN for bringing us those headlines. Daily headlines and their full newscasts can be found at fsrn.org. I'm Holly the Dis.
And I'm Casey the Edgar. Last Thursday's vandalism at Port Coquitlam Mosque has drawn condemnation from the Canadian Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARECAN. CARECAN is a non-profit grassroots organization that seeks to enhance Muslim civic engagement and promote human rights. Their graffiti allegedly included a racist slur, and the Port Coquitlam police are currently investigating this incident as a potential hate crime, says Ihsan Gardi, executive. Director of CARECAN, quote, "While very troubling, CARECAN does not believe such incidents represent the sentiments of the vast majority of Canadians, and we ask our fellow citizens of conscience to join us in condemning this act. Furthermore, we urge mosque leaders and officials to remain vigilant and immediately report suspicious behavior to CARECAN and the proper authorities in order to establish a clear record of such incidents."
In national news, Stockwell Day, former leader of the Canadian Alliance and current president of the Treasury Board, announced over the weekend that he will not be seeking re-election. Day was joined by fellow Conservative MP John Cummins from Delta BC and Chuck Strahl, the current transport minister, all longtime politicians. Said Day in his official statement, "I wish the Prime Minister full success in the days ahead in the efforts on behalf of all the Canadians remaining in maintaining a Canada that stands strong and free, and I pledge my ongoing wholehearted support in that shared pursuit." Conservative critics are stating that the resignation of the three BC MPs represents a shift in the Conservative power base to the east, and questions are arising as to what this may mean in the event of a spring election. In his official statement, Prime Minister Harper expressed his gratitude to Day, Cummins, and Strahl, saying, quote, "I would like to thank Ministers Chuck Strahl and Stockwell Day, as well as Member of Parliament John Cummins, for their extraordinary dedication to public service throughout the years. I look forward to working with them in the best interests of Canada until the end of their mandate. They have served Canadians and their constituents with distinction," end quote.
In local news, the loss of federal funding for an Aboriginal youth program in Metro Vancouver is drawing criticism from the Urban Native Youth Association, or the UNYA. The Aboriginal Youth First Sports and Recreation Program will lose all of its funding at the end of March, despite more than doubling its projected interventions with youth. Said Linda Gray, executive director of UNYA, quote, most youth have never had the opportunity to participate in many of the programs or even been outside of Vancouver's east side until they joined our program. One participant adds to this, saying, quote, AYF gave me something to do rather than sitting at home doing nothing, hanging out on the streets, making trouble, or even partying. Since joining AYF, I have found a bunch of new friends who are interested in positive, healthy activities, which make it easier for me to make healthy choices in life. Federal Public Safety Minister Vic Tews recently stated that the government will support projects that work, but that he will not speculate about what might be included in the upcoming federal budget.
In campus news, six students, faculty, and alumni from the UBC Creative Writing Program have made the CBC Literary Award finalists. The prize, determined by a peer review process, receives approximately 5,000 entries each year and is seen as one of Canada's most prestigious literary prizes. The first prize is $6,000 and the second prize is $4,000. Meredith Hambrock, currently pursuing a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing at UBC, has been selected for her short story titled All the Girls Love Jesus, and other shortlisted UBC candidates include Gina Leola Woolsey for her nonfiction work My Best Friend, Sonnet Labit for her poetry Permanent Residence Test, Terry Armitage for her creative nonfiction piece, Mr. Taylor's Birthday Suit, and Brian Brett for his poetry, To Your Scattered Bodies Go, and Zoe Steichman for her short story, Before Digi Asks Her to Marry Him. The winners will be announced on CBC Radio 1 on March 24th.
In provincial news, BC Premier Christy Clark was sworn in as a Premier of British Columbia at a ceremony this afternoon in Government House, Victoria. Clark unveiled a new, smaller cabinet, which included Kevin Falcon as Finance Minister and Deputy Premier Mike De Jong as Health Minister, Mary Pollock for Aboriginal Relations, Terry Clark as Environment Minister, Mary McNeil as Minister of Children and Family Development, Blair Lextrom as Transportation Minister, Rich Coleman as responsible for Housing, Energy, and Mines, Harry Bloy as the Minister of Social Development and Multiculturalism, Pat Bell as Tourism Minister, Ida Chung as Minister of Community and Sport, George Abbott on Education, Don McRae for Agriculture, Steve Thompson for Natural Resources, Naomi Yamamoto on Advanced Education, Stephanie Cadieu as Minister of Labor and Citizenship, Shirley Bond as Public Safety Minister, and Barry Penner as the Attorney General. Noticeably absent was the former Finance Minister, Cole Hansen, who was responsible for bringing in the controversial Harmonized Sales Tax, or HST. Says Clark of the goals of her government, quote, putting families first also has to mean focusing on education with passion, with energy, and with real commitment. Our government will be open to the people of British Columbia.
In campus news, the recent AMS referendum has seen all but one of the different voting topics pass. The substantive changes, with the most well-known addressing a change in the requirements for quorum, had a 58% vote in favor, but failed to meet the quorum required to pass. The other issues, bylaws, the UPass, tuition, and AMS fees, all passed. The most controversial of these, the raising of AMS fees by $5, passed with a 52% vote in its favor.
We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The AMS Food Bank will be selling delicious Krispy Kreme donuts to help pay for non-perishable food items to keep their service going this spring.
Forbidden donut.
You can help by stopping by the Sub Concourse during the week of March 14th to 18th and buying some delectable treats for you and your friends. Support the AMS Food Bank and enjoy a fabulous donut for your efforts.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Casey Adgarian. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.com.ca, excuse me, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia.
So commerce is often associated with a lack of heart, but a group of Sauder students are proving the very opposite. We're joined in studio now by Veronica Cho, a member of the 5 Days for the Homeless Project. So Veronica, it's great to have you in here today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a bit about 5 Days for the Homeless. What's it all about?
So 5 Days for the Homeless is basically having a couple of university students, have the most authentic experience being homeless on campus in order to raise awareness about the issues considering homeless youth in downtown Eastside. Also, a large focus is based on fundraising efforts. So for 5 days, we're targeting $20,000 in fundraising for this initiative.
Wow, so how many of you are there doing this?
There is around 10 of us, and most of us are from Sauder, but there are other students from Arts as well.
Wow, so where are you camping out exactly? It sounds like a tough thing to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, with the rain and the weather and the cold, it's kind of tough, but we're camping outside of UBC Bookstore.
Okay.
We have a little shanty house built up and whatnot. It's pretty obvious to see when you walk past the bookstore.
Right, so your first night was last night, right?
Yes.
So tell us a bit about that. What was it like?
It's always tough. I mean, it was very scary and a bit nerve-wracking at first because this is something that none of us have actually done before. I personally didn't bring a sleeping bag or a pillow, so it was definitely cold and rainy, and it took a couple of hours to really try to get to sleep, and especially with the cold, it really sunk in how hard the next few days would be sleeping homeless outside.
And were there any like notable incidents for like other people being outside, or did everyone sort of adapt to it all right?
I mean, it's the first day, so the first day is always the hardest. It's hardest to adapt, but everyone was prepared and they knew that it would be hard. Like, we didn't sign up for this because it would be easy and good times. So it was a bit hard at first, but we all got through it in the morning.
Great. So I guess what other coverage have you received for this? I know we've got you here, obviously, but how aware is UBC as a whole that this is going on?
Well, we've been doing some media coverage. It's funny, actually. We were sleeping, and it was all quiet at around 2:30 a.m., but CTV showed up during the night, woke up one of our participants, and did a little bit of an interview there. I wasn't personally awake for that, but I heard about it in the morning, which is quite funny. And also, our very own UBC newspaper, the UBC, Justin McElroy, who's one of the co-editors for that, did an editorial on that, and that was more of a coverage about how it's not, what we're doing isn't really being homeless, because the extremities of living homeless in downtown Eastside are very far removed from what we're trying to do here, and there was some coverage on that too, was on that aspect.
And I guess what was your reaction to that, because it sounds like a bit more of negative feedback?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what McElroy did state in his editorial. What we're doing right now, living homeless at UBC, it's far different from living homeless in downtown Eastside, because UBC is relatively very safe. And as for the food, we have friends who are willing to donate to us food, and in that aspect it's very different. And I don't think the point is to make a statement saying that we are homeless, this is something extreme that we're doing, so you should donate. I think the point of doing this is to really open a dialogue about what we're doing here, because the plight of homeless youth in downtown Eastside is something that hits very close to home, but because it's such a problem, and it's a problem no one really knows how to fix, the easiest thing and the thing we have been doing as a community is really being apathetic towards the whole thing, putting a blind eye over it. So what we're trying to do is really trying to initiate some sort of dialogue within UBC with student leaders and people who live in Vancouver. These youth are very similar to us in so many respects, and just opening that dialogue is, I think, what we're trying to do, and we're doing it with under the circumstances.
Well, great. That sounds great, Veronica. I hope you have great luck and good luck with, I guess, keeping dry and keeping warm this next week.
For sure. I mean, it's going to be rainy, but we can pull through. For sure.
Well, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So that was Veronica Cho, who's with 5 Days for the Homeless, right? That's happening right here on UBC campus. And for more information, you can check out, is there a website, Veronica?
Yep, there is a website, 5days.ca, and that also has all of our blogs. We're going to be blogging about our experiences and our opinions. They're definitely going to change throughout the week, and you'll see a lot of orange people in your classrooms talking and whatnot about it. So,
great. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so big pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education, every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I'm troubled by shapeless fears. Who can live in the modern world without catching his share of them? I hope I've landed on my feet this time.
Need a place to rent? Have a place for rent? AMS Rents Line can help. AMS Rents Line is an easy-to-operate, touch-tone, and web-based system that connects thousands of landlords with UBC students looking for off-campus housing. UBC students can search the ads for free or place a 2-week posting for $5. To view current listings, visit www.amsrentsline.com.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Casey Edgarian. It's time for your weekly weather forecast from the UBC Storm Club. Tonight, it is cloudy, rain in the evening, and a low of 6. Tomorrow, there will be rain also, a high of 11, low of 6. Wednesday, more rain, high 10, low 5. And Thursday, there is a 60% chance of showers with a high of 10 and a low of 4. On Friday, there's a 70% chance with high of 11, low of 3. And Saturday and Sunday, more rain, high of 10, low of 4. We are now going to bring you a special report from the UBC journalism student Claudia Goodline, who attended a protest outside the Olympic Village complex downtown this past weekend.
In 2010, Olympic fever hit the city of Vancouver, but the promise to spread the wealth of the Games went up in flames. A year later, some haven't gotten over the burn of broken promises.
We're here to boycott the sell-off of affordable and social housing at the Olympic Village, so we have a picket line here.
On Saturday, Tristan Markle was one of 12 protesters who gathered in front of the Olympic Village for the third week in a row. This week, they braved the rain. Last week, it was the snow. The week before, it was the cops, who broke up their 200-person rally. For 5 hours on Saturday, the protesters politely handed out pamphlets to potential buyers, explaining the city's broken promises. The billion-dollar Olympic Village was meant to be 66% affordable housing, half of which would be for social housing. But now it's only 20% affordable housing, leaving only 10% for social housing. Rooms promised for the poor were now only fit for millionaires.
They only let people in if they look a certain way. Like, you have to look pretty rich for it to even be let in. For example, one man, he had jeans and a toque, so they wouldn't let him in for 2 hours.
The protesters bounced their signs against the wind, signs that read, "Homes for All," and "Vancouver is not a commodity." Joseph Jones brought a homemade gong made up of a mop handle and a sheet of metal. It greeted every potential buyer that walked in or out of the building. Fighting for more social housing has taken up most of this retired librarian's life.
I took early retirement. I had a lot of ideas about projects and travel, and I've done some of that, but not nearly as much as I would have, because this has become a fairly major project. I happen to have ended up living in a crisis place at a crisis time, and I recognize that, and I feel that I have to do something about it. It has sort of eaten my life, actually.
Tristan Markle felt they were making a difference by protesting.
Last week, we convinced some people not only to not buy it, but they came out and they spoke against it. Some people came back to get out of their contract.
But this Saturday, not too many potential buyers seemed interested in their cause.
They're entitled to do what they want.
Has it changed your ideas on whether you'd want to buy? Or?
No, because I don't know their story. I'm not really interested in that. I want to see what they've got here, and that's about it. We're just looking.
Others question whether anyone other than a millionaire would want to live in the Olympic Village. But with a 10,000-person waitlist for social housing in BC, Tristan Markle felt there would probably be at least a few.
Would you want to live in this village? The people who live on the street and don't have adequate housing would love to live in a nice place.
So that was a report from UBC journalism student Claudia Goodline regarding a recent protest that took place this weekend at the Olympic Village. So I'm joined in the studio now by Olivia and Kirsten, who are two forestry students who are working on a conservation competition to be part of a project concerning the orangutans in Borneo. So welcome to the studio, girls.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So tell me about this competition. What is it about and what are you guys trying to achieve?
So this is a global initiative, a global movement of young people from all over the world trying to halt and stop deforestation and destruction of the world's forests. This particular project will be happening in Borneo, and we are participating in a competition to be part of a group of 10 young leaders that will be going to Borneo, Indonesia, and working on a reforestation project and filming a 3D documentary and TV series for National Geographic Entertainment.
Okay, so what, I guess you guys mentioned that you were both competing individually, so what is your basic competition thing right now? Like, what is it that you're trying to gain awareness with?
The competition is through video submission, so everyone that wants to participate has to make a video and submit it onto it's deforestaction.com. And you kind of, there's a little bit of a criteria of like what you've done in the past, what deforestation means to you, how you want to change it, and why you want to be part of this competition. So we both have our own individual videos, and I'm actually competing with my sister, and we're both trying to go.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit, I guess, for each of you, what is your reason for wanting to go, and why are you interested in this project?
Okay, well, I actually say this in my video as well, but this project just epitomizes everything I was hoping to experience when getting into the conservation field. We're both studying the same thing, which is natural resource conservation here in the Faculty of Forestry at UBC. So I think this project would be just a great way to create global awareness about deforestation and actually make a difference in the world and create a home for thousands of orangutans that are currently being displaced by deforestation, because deforestation in Indonesia is a really big problem. So we would be working with local communities and creating a sanctuary for thousands of these orangutans. So I think that's pretty amazing. And working with Dr. Willis Smith, he's the like project leader. He's a really big
conservationist with orangutans. He's done a lot of work there before.
Yeah, so that would really be awesome. And I think many of the reasons also apply to Kirsten, right?
Yeah, a lot of the same reasons. Both my sister and I have been involved for a very long time in environmental things. I've done a lot of international things, and I would really want to do more hands-on. And my sister has graduated recently as a biochemical engineer, so she wants to take her knowledge and then apply it to the real world. So it's kind of like...
So I guess beyond just the competition for the product itself, what is the significance of making this 3D film and like having it on National Geographic? I mean, who are you hoping, or I guess who's a project hoping to reach with it, and what is the impact it foresees having on the public awareness?
Well, this whole project is with the group Deforest Action, and that's actually a group of hundreds of thousands of youth all over the world. And so the whole point of this project is there's also a reality series component of it. So we're going to be reaching out to youth everywhere to inspire them to take on their own projects in their own communities. So I guess the whole thing is to just be global. Its main goal is just to reach everyone, to not only make them aware of the problems in Borneo, but the problems in their own backyard, and to get involved with the whole project.
Yeah, as project leaders, as part of the team, we would be communicating with the rest of the world, with the rest of all the youth involved in the Deforest Action project. We would be communicating how the project is coming along and, yeah, what the advances are in the reforestation of this big area and the orangutans and things like that. So the communication aspect is a big part of it.
Right. So when would this be happening then, the trip down to Borneo? Or I guess when is your own deadline for the competition and then beyond that?
Well, they just changed the deadline recently. So right now the submission the date for submissions to close is the 10th of April, April 10th. And after that, the winners will be announced May 1st. And the actual filming starts July 1st, and it goes on for 5 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so 5 months in Borneo.
And I guess for each of you, if this does happen, what do you see the impact of this being, I guess, for, I guess, you personally, and for your degree as well? I mean, because 5 months away from home and away from even school, it can be a big jump for some people. So how do both of you feel about this?
Well, I think that it would complement our studies perfectly. It would be, as Kirsten said before, a really hands-on approach to what we're actually studying and what we're passionate about, because we've both decided to dedicate our lives to this kind of thing because we're both studying conservation. So I think it would be an amazing opportunity and, just a complementary thing. And in terms of being away from home, I think it would be just a growing experience.
I agree with all that. It would go right along with our conservation program, and our faculty is amazing, so they'd be really supportive of all these types of things. And it would just, being away from home, as Olivia said, it'd be a growing experience. It would be amazing, and it would help with our resume and like being able to do these things into the future.
Yeah, and then we would be away from home, but at the same time, with all the filming going on, we would be at the same time communicating, not just with home, but with the rest of the world, what we would be doing there. We didn't mention it before, but this project, this documentary that will be directed by Kathy Henkel. She has directed other conservation-related documentaries, one of them being The Burning Season. That's a pretty famous one. And the cinematographer is the Don Alpine. He did Moulin Rouge and Wolverine and Romeo plus Juliet. So it's a pretty big project.
Well, that sounds great. How can people vote for either of you or see your submissions?
If you go to deforestaction.com, you can get all the information there, and then it will take you to a page on voting, and you can see us. I am rocking faculty colors or pride in a plaid shirt, and Olivia has on 3D glasses.
And we're both at the very bottom of the submission list of candidates. Kirsten is around the second line, right?
Yeah.
And I'm around the sixth line, starting from the bottom up, because now there are about 100 submissions. So if you scroll down, you'll be able to look at our videos and vote for us and learn more about the project and see how you can get involved.
Well, best of luck to both of you, and I hope this project is a great success.
Thank you so much, Claire.
So that was Olivia and Kirsten, who are both competing to be part of a project that will be going to Borneo to help out with deforestation, or I guess to prevent deforestation and help out with the orangutans there. So you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Claire Eagle, and we will be back in just a few moments.
He's a prisoner of cocaine addiction.
Cocaine took my drink. It made me lie, steal.
Cocaine took my will, my soul.
And all I wanted was more cocaine.
More cocaine.
Cocaine Anonymous gave me freedom and saved my life.
If you got a problem with cocaine, pick up the phone. We're here to help.
1-866-662-8300.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots global unembedded international independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy, in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show slash podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Holly Disrink. You're hearing us on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia. Thanks for being with us. It's now time for our health segment with Sharon Hundahl.
Hi, everyone. So this past week, I went to the Engineering Wellness Expo that was on Tuesday and Wednesday last week. So I had a couple quick interviews with some of the participants, such as a chiropractor who can offer us some tips. So we'll go right into that clip with a few other participants shortly after. Chiropractor that regularly attends our health fairs at UBC. So Dr. Chensey, can you tell us what you're doing here at the fair for students?
Hi, what we're doing here is we are setting up, have a booth here to check people's postures. Some people have a very poor slouching posture that continues even when they know someone's watching them, and other people actually have some decent posture around here.
Wow, so I do see some scales there. So are you actually measuring students, or what are those there for?
Yes. When you're standing up straight and you're in balance, when we check you on the scales, it should also be balanced from the left side to the right side. If you are not in balance, that may show up in big differences on the weigh scales. Sometimes we've even seen as much as 10 kilos difference side to side.
Wow, wow. So that's really interesting. So what do you feel are the biggest issues for students that you've been seeing today?
The most common problems we've seen are what we call anterior head carriage, where your head is far forward of where your shoulders are, and very flat low backs, which are usually indicative of people who slouch, where your whole back is rounded, and that's not a good posture because it means that you're not very strong and you're not using your muscles properly, and that makes it easier for your upper back to get tired and achy and your low back to be weak and also easier to get low back pain.
Okay, so I have heard many people say that things about posture are merely habit caused, but how do you know when it becomes a greater problem?
Yes, posture is a lot to do about habits. And if you can change that habit early enough, do it. Be conscious of it. Remind yourself all the time. And we can hopefully prevent problems. And that's why I'm here today at UBC. We'd like to change things when people are young enough that we can make these changes as quickly and easily as possible. When you cannot maintain a good posture, you try to do it, and after 30 seconds you're too tired or it actually hurts to hold that posture, then that means that your habit's more than just a bad habit, that it's actually changed the structure in your spine. And that's when you might need some professional help, like from a chiropractor, to find out how bad is it, can it be changed, what will it take, and get you on your way so that you can be feeling great. Because you're supposed to be, especially when you're in your 20s.
That's right. So do you have any last-minute tips that we could use as students?
We have a book called Pete the Posture Parrot, and kids learn this really quickly. It says, sit up straight, stand up straight, and you'll feel great. If you can remember those three things, like my two-year-old can, then you're already on your way to having better posture.
Okay, thanks so much, Dr. Chensi. And where can we get more information about you and other services that are provided?
I am included in the Student Care Network, so if you want to look on iamaplan.ca, or you can visit my website directly, which is www.drchensi.com.
Okay, thanks so much, and best of luck with the rest of the fair. So I'm here with Kate from the Suicide Awareness Committee on campus. Kate, can you tell us what you're doing here for students at the Expo?
We're sharing information today about suicide awareness on campus. So we're talking about what students can do if they are experiencing crisis themselves or if they know someone else that they would like to get help for. So we're sharing our resources about that. And we're also talking about QPR, which is a suicide prevention program that stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer. So we have some statistics over here. And the survey that happens on campus, that's the National College Health Assessment that happened last in 2009, indicated that a lot of students at UBC, 55 to 60% of them experience a high degree of stress. And from that same survey, 1% of students at UBC indicated that they had attempted suicide in the last year.
Wow, that's a lot of people, definitely. So I'm glad you're here for the fair and reaching out to students. I'm here with Sarah, a practicum counselor here at UBC with counseling services. Sarah, can you tell us what you're doing at the Expo for students?
Wanting to let students know that there are counseling services available to students here at no cost and that they can come in and just sort of sharing the information about the counseling and also the group support that's available.
So how would a student find out exactly about the services that you provide?
Well, some of that is available on the Live Well, Learn Well UBC, which encompasses a whole bunch of other services. Or they can also drop by Counseling Services, which is in Brock Hall. Or they can give us a call as well, and we're at 604-822-3811 to come and speak to someone.
Okay, thanks so much for sharing this resource. And did you have any last-minute things to mention to students?
I would just say reach out. You know, one of the things I would suggest if you know someone who's having a hard time is give them the 1-800-SUICIDE number or, you know, listen to them and advise them to go talk to someone about it. There's lots of people that are ready and waiting to help and qualified to help, so just do something about it.
Okay, and just to clarify, if a student did have other problems other than suicide, they could take that up with counseling services, is that right?
Absolutely. We have some groups that help you deal with anxiety and stress and depression, and we do personal counseling, so that could be depression, anxiety, anger management, relationships, those kinds of personal issues that we all have to deal with at some time in our life.
I'm here with Jing Cheng from Agora. She's a general manager.
We're located in the basement of the McMillan building, and I guess we're here today because we just want to promote Agora, make people more aware of our presence here on campus, because we're not really well known outside of land and food systems, and we basically we sell hot lunch menu items, we sell coffee, baked goods, tea at a really affordable price, at $1 for a baked good, pretty much as cheap as you can get, and really good food. We're all volunteer run, so yeah, come by Agora if you get a chance.
Okay,
yeah.
So I see a lot of good food spread out on this table. So are you selling these items, or are they given away for free?
We're giving out some of the granola bar samples, but everything else we are selling for $1, which is incredibly cheap, and I think they taste better than Starbucks personally. So
okay, yeah, they seem to be really popular here among students. So where is Agora, and what else should we know about it before we wrap up?
It's in the basement of the McMillan building, which is right across from the Kaiser building here, and we're open 9:30 to 3 p.m. Monday to Friday, and that's pretty much it, yeah.
So there were many other groups that we spoke to at the Expo, and lots of great resources and ideas to share. So these links will be made available close to where the podcast will be on for CITR. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Sharon. It was great to have you in the studio. Commerce is often associated with a lack of heart, but a group of solid students. Today's show was produced by Glare Eagle. And the entire news at CITR, thanks for listening.
Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, give us a hot news tip, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter with the username CITRNews. You can subscribe to our podcasts and listen to past shows at citr.ca. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. Today's show was produced by Claire Eagle. From the entire team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Sore Throats Clapping Hands at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Sechrist out.
Seem to have great significance.
Change without your consent, without your okay. It happened again. I woke up today and everything changed. All my friends and all my family suddenly don't understand me. Understand I'm not the man they think I am.
Try chasing it down, try chasing it down, try chasing it down.
Okay, all my friends and all my family suddenly don't understand.